This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network with another look at Virginia history. CPN is supported by the Daily Progress. Check out what's happening in Central Virginia at dailyprogress.com. 2 years ago, James Madison's home at Montpelier in Orange County was partially demolished to make way for renovations to the historic mansion. Ownership of Montpelier passed through many hands after James Madison's death in 1836, and each successive owner added on to the house. In 1901, Montpelier was bought by William DuPont, who more than doubled the size of the mansion, taking it further away from the look it had when Madison called it home. In 1983, the home passed into the hands of the National Trust for Historic Preservation, with an eye towards restoring it back to the way it was in Madison's day. On a sunny Saturday in late April, a crowd of about 300 people gathered in front of the house to witness the public unveiling of the restored facade. A large red curtain is draped across the front porch. Let's listen in as Michael Quinn, president of the Montpelier Foundation, welcomes the assembled guests.
This is a very long-awaited and important milestone in restoring the Madison's home. Reaching this point has been the work of more than 2 years, and it's taken the effort of many, many talented people to reach this landmark when the restoration of Montpelier is at the halfway point. The additions of later owners have been taken down. The stucco that covered the original brick has been removed. And the brick, the columns, the chimneys have all been restored. What is less visible, but equally important, has been the work to restore the structural integrity of the home, repairing the damage that time and water has inflicted on the massive timbers that frame the interior and the roof, and the damage to the brick walls that form its exterior. As these important repairs were underway, our work crews also focused on the exterior, repairing and reinstalling windows, sashes, and door frames, replicating the sophisticated design of the flat roofs on the two wings, and carefully making and installing by hand the wood shingle that cover the main roof. Some work remains, such as the railings around the deck on the roofs of the wing, but the exterior restoration is largely complete, and the scaffolding and tarps that have wrapped Montpelier for the last 2 years have now come down. Finishing the restoration will take another 2 years, as our crews will now tackle the interior of the home. And I should mention that the work we are carrying out completely carries out the wishes of the last private owner of Montpelier, Mrs. Marion DuPont Scott. The restoration of the exterior has removed the veil that fell over James Madison's home almost as soon as he died. As later owners applied stucco, modified the roofs, constructed additions, and more than doubled the size of the home. With today's unveiling, we will reveal, for the first time in a century and one half, the home that James and Dolly Madison envisioned, the home they created, and the home they loved. The core of this home was built by Madison's father. James Madison was 10 years old when he moved in. About 35 years later, Madison came home with his wife Dolly and her young son, and he expanded the home to create living quarters for his new family. About 10 years later, when James Madison became president, he expanded the home once again, adding the one-story wings on either side, creating a 12,000 square foot country estate for his family. This home, then, the resulting home, tells the story of James Madison's life, his youth here growing up in the Virginia Piedmont, his marriage, his family, his political achievements, his retirement, and his death. The home also expresses Madison's creativity and genius in the scope and power of its architecture. In restoring Montpelier, our goal is not to restore a home. Our goal is to restore James Madison, to create one place where Americans can encounter the character, the personality, and the presence of this remarkable founder, the father of the Constitution.
Congressman Eric Cantor represents Orange County in the U.S. House of Representatives, serving in the seat that was first held by James Madison.
It is a true honor, almost indescribable, to stand here before you today to take part in history, and also to be the one that currently holds the seat that was once held by James Madison in the U.S. House of Representatives. All of us Virginians are fortunate to have such a rich and unique history, not only to guide us when we deliberate on issues that face us today, but frankly to be a part of our everyday lives. As Virginians, we also bear the obligation of the legacy left to us by the great public servants of the 18th century who led this nation and who were also proud to call themselves Virginians. James Madison was the principal creative genius and intellectual force behind the United States Constitution. He was widely hailed as the father of the Constitution in his own lifetime. He dedicated his life to founding this nation and served not only in Congress, but subsequently as Secretary of State and as our fourth president. Today in America, as we face very turbulent times, we face an ongoing war against the terrorists in Iraq, and God forbid, a potential face-off or showdown with the nuclear Iran. And in that context, I would like to leave you with an excerpt from a letter that James Madison wrote to the King of Algiers in 1816 as further testament to Madison's lasting wisdom and influence for all of us, not only here in Virginia, but throughout the world. And he wrote, "The United States, while it wishes for war with no nation, will buy the peace of none. It is the settled policy of the United States that while peace is better than war, war is better than tribute." From James Madison to the Day of Algiers in 1816.
Senator John Warner was also on hand to preside over the unveiling and talked about how Americans are increasingly looking back at the roots of the nation's founding.
I drove here today. I always go down by Mount Vernon to avoid some of 95. And I suppose it's 1,000 trips I've gone down that road and past Mount Vernon on the way to different parts of our lovely state. But I saw a sight this morning that really bears witness to what we're doing today. There were no less than, I counted them, 55 giant buses bringing students and people from all over to see our first president's home. Now that struck me as clear evidence of how Americans and indeed many from abroad are coming back to examine the very roots of our great republic. And what a thrill it is here to be with you today, because we're adding a chapter to those roots and adding it in such a way that people can come from everywhere to share in the magnificence of his contributions. Significance of this day, I think we'll all remember to tell our children and grandchildren and others that this structure behind us was not just a simple edifice, for it was here that those thoughts that were made possible by the quietude, the magnificent, the sylvan setting, which rested the mind and allowed the mind to begin to create and look into the future and determine what is needed to establish the United States of America. And indeed, when we look at the Constitution, pause to think that in the 200 plus years that we've been blessed with that instrument, our Republic of the United States of America is the oldest continuous functioning democratic republic in the whole world. That's astonishing. And we're here to talk about how much this man gave to this country. But the historians talked about Madison as a farmer. His earliest letters from Montpelier after his retirement were filled with talk of the fields, the crops, the market prospects, and the weather. He actually had a fence post out here And he would take a little tin cup and bring it out on the eve of a storm to collect the rain, and then he carefully recorded the rainfall. There wasn't anything about this countryside that he didn't love. And one time he entertained an Italian count that came through, a very pompous, formidable European. And the count later wrote in his diary that he met Madison, and he said, "I doubt if you could find any former great leader in the world who wears pantaloons and farm patches on his knees." But that shows the humility of this great man. He was extraordinary. And Adams and Jefferson called him the best farmer in the world. Historians also point out that Madison had a telescope, and he was up here on the portico with it. But he really didn't use it so much to study the stars and the planets. He rather peeked over here to see who might be building somewhere to destroy the vista. And he loved to watch the county road and spy on the buggies that went by to see who was in the buggies. Oh, what a man that we do honor here today. Then I didn't realize until I did this bit of research, my beloved University of Virginia, where I was privileged to graduate a half century ago, as a matter of fact, in 1826, when Jefferson, the first rector of the university, died, Madison became the rector of that university, when he, for 8 years, never missed a meeting of the board unless ill health prevented it. And he was accompanied as he took his buggy ride to Charlottesville by his beloved Dolly Madison. And many a student saw them hand in hand traversing the colonnades of the university. And I found this quote that Jefferson wrote to a friend about education. He said as follows, "Institutions of learning throw that light over the public mind, which is the best security against crafty and dangerous encroachments on the public interest." I think he was thinking of us at that time. Then, how many of you know that his picture graces the $5,000 bill? And in the brief sheet that you gave me, Mr. President, you said, "No longer in circulation." But I checked it. I called the Treasury of the United States last night. There were only 200 of those bills issued in a period between 1914 and 1969. And the Treasury assured me that it's still in circulation. But I then went to eBay and discovered the $5,000 bill today is worth $62,000. So grab your wallets, dear friends, if you have one in it, and don't give it away. Anyway, Madison had an interesting demeanor. He was very short. And like so many short people, they feel they have to compensate in other ways. And his voice was high-pitched and a bit squeaky. He was not considered a great orator. Nevertheless, when he rose and spoke, it was with thunder and conviction. And at times he got so consumed in his remarks and so vibrant that he didn't know how long he was speaking. And he went on and on and on. So then he got an aide. And he said, "Now your sole purpose is to be as close as possible to me when I'm speaking. And if it is your judgment I have spoken too long, then I want you to grab my coattail and jerk me down." Well, there was one particular time during the Constitutional Convention when he was on an absolute tirade. And went on and on and on and on. And finally, virtually because of fatigue, he sat down. And he suddenly realized that he'd been too long. And he turned to this aide and said, "Why had you not grabbed my coattail?" And the aide replied, Sarah, I would sooner have reached out to grab a bolt of lightning. Thinking of that convention, dear friends, there's a quote that comes out of it that applies to you, everyone who is here today. And that is at the conclusion in the hot day of September, 1789, Ben Franklin walked out, his brow heavily sweated, fatigue showing, and the press grabbed him. And they said, "Mr. Franklin, what have you given the people of the United States?" And he replied, "We have given them a republic if they can keep it. By your actions today, you're contributing to keeping that republic." Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time to unveil the mansion.
And so it was. Senator Warner and Representative Cantor walked to the front porch, where they were joined by Madison descendant John Macon and Rebecca Gilmore Coleman, a descendant of one of Madison's slaves. The group pulled levers, which dropped curtains to reveal the brick exterior of Montpelier as it would have looked 197 years ago, when Madison was just beginning his first term as president.
Drop the veil.
The public was invited to take a look at the inside, climbing up wooden temporary steps leading up the portico. Rebecca Gilmore Coleman's great-grandfather, George Gilmore, was born into slavery at Montpelier in 1810, and after emancipation, he built a cabin just down the road from the mansion. Gilmore Coleman says it is important to recognize the full role played by slaves in the founding of the country.
As we all know, African Americans played a tremendous part in making this state what it is and giving James Madison the time to write the Constitution. So I think me as being here is a wonderful representative of the enslaved labor that was put here and carried out here to help Madison to accomplish the things that he did.
I spoke to several people as they came out of the house, fresh from the tour of the inside. Huber Compton of Orange has been witness to many changes at Montpelier over the years.
Absolutely great. Fantastic. I think it's very significant we remember our history. And they're doing a great job here.
Linda Pritchard was visiting her son from West Virginia.
Well, it's still very rough, and it'll be nice in 2 years.
So what is left to do? Mark Wenger is the architectural historian for the Montpelier Restoration Project. He says to truly restore the house, it's important to know its full history.
Initially, the house was built in the early 1760s by Madison's father. It was expanded in 1797 and again in 1809. And what you see today represents the conclusion of that 1809 building campaign. After Madison died, the house went to his wife, Dolly, and the house was sold in 1844, and it went through a series of ownerships in the 19th century. Around 1850, the end bays of the portico that we see here were dismantled, and the shafts of the columns were extended all the way down to the ground. At the same time, the house was covered entirely in stucco, and a number of windows were closed up to kind of give the thing a greater appearance of solidity. And finally, they reamed out the basement windows to make to give the basement good illumination, to make the basement a kind of habitable work area. So there's a very profound remodeling of this place around 1850. The house was remodeled still again in the 1860s by some folks named Carson, who reestablished the full breadth of this portico, and still again in the 1880s by Dietrich and Bradley, and they pretty well modified the interiors of the house to sort of bring it up to date on the interior.
Now that the exterior is largely complete, attention will be fully devoted to the interior. Crews will apply 21st century building technology to restore the 19th century essence of how it appeared in Madison's day.
I think what we want to do is keep as much of Madison as possible. We want to capture that house at its maximum extent. We don't want to be taking away any elements that were here during Madison's lifetime. We have pretty well buttoned up the exterior of the house, and now we have to start on the interior. And the restoration of the exterior has been a really remarkable transformation. I think the change that will overtake the interior is even more breathtaking. The bones of the Madison interior have been put back, but what we have to do now is put back the finishes. All the woodwork, all the chimney pieces, the stairs, all the ornamental aspects of the interior that have disappeared since Madison's lifetime. And in most cases, the house has supplied the answers for what should be there. Documents only go so far in telling us what should be here, and after that point, the house itself becomes the star witness, and it has rarely failed us. We're working right now on the stairways, we have an advisory committee that looks at our designs and evaluates those in the light of the physical evidence we have, in the light of what we know about building practice in Madison's lifetime generally. So we have lots of help with this.
On a personal level, what do you think?
Well, it's a real privilege to be involved with this, and it's just a huge kick in the pants to see the house finally unveiled and in this state. It's been a long time coming, and I'm just ecstatic.
The restoration of the interior is scheduled to be completed by the end of 2007. For more information, visit Montpelier.org. You've been listening to a report on the unveiling of James Madison's Montpelier from the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. CPN is supported by the Daily Progress at dailyprogress.com. For plenty of articles about the news you need to know, visit dailyprogress.com. Our website is sevillepodcast.com. I'm Sean Tubbs. Thanks for listening.